Chapter 27. I went to my office. Traffic wasn't as bad as it could have been. It looked like the commuters hadn't poured into town in the usual volume. The traffic lights were out, but there were cops at most of the problem intersections, and everyone seemed to be driving slowly and reasonably during the crisis. That's what they were calling it on the radio, the crisis. There were a lot more people than usual out and about on the street, and with far less of the usual brisk, business-like manner. All in all, it was about the best reaction to the situation you could hope for. It seemed like people could go one of two ways. Either they freak out and start rioting, or they actually act like human beings in trouble ought to and look out for one another. When L.A. blacked out, there had been big-time rioting. In New York, people had pulled together. It was just as well that people hadn't reacted quite so blindly as they might have. Without even trying, I could feel the slow, sour tension of black magic pulsing and swirling through the city. With the subtle influence of all that dark energy behind it, even a mild panic could have turned ugly and fast. Of course, it wasn't dark yet. Nightfall could change things. As advanced as mankind likes to think it is, we all have that age-old, primal, undeniable dread of darkness, of being unable to see danger coming. We don't like to think that we're afraid of the dark anymore, but if that's true, then why do we work so hard to make sure our cities are constantly lit? We cloak ourselves in so much light that we can barely see the stars at night. Fear is a funny thing. In the right light, even tiny and insignificant fears can suddenly grow, swelling up to monstrous proportions. With the black magic rolling around the way it was, that instinctive fear of the dark would feed upon itself, doubling and redoubling, and with no explanation to tell them why the lights hadn't come on, people would start to forget their carefully rational reasons not to be afraid in favor of panic. Even assuming I prevented a brand spanking new dark godling from arising, tonight could be bad. It could be very bad. I got to my office and tried to call Sheila's number. The phones weren't cooperating with me, which hardly came as a surprise. They rarely worked perfectly on the best of days. I kept a copy of a reverse phone book at my office, though, and I found the address of her Cabrini Green apartment. While it wasn't as bad as it had been in the past, it wasn't exactly the best part of town, either. I had a brief pang of longing for the gun I'd lost in the alley behind Box Place. It wasn't that the gun was more effective than other things I could do to defend myself, but it was a hell of a lot more of a deterrent to the average Chicago thug than a carved stick. Just for fun, I tried the phones again, dialing my contact number for the nearest outpost of the wardens. So help me God, the phone rang. "Yes," answered a woman with a low, roughened voice. I fumbled my little notebook of security phrases out of my duster's pocket. One second, I said. I didn't think the call would go through. I flipped the little notebook open to the last page and said, Chartreuse Sirocco.
Rabbit, answered the voice.
I checked the notebook. It was the countersign.
This is Wizard Dresden, I said. I have a Code Wolf situation here. Repeat, Code Wolf.
The woman on the other end of the phone hissed.
This is Warden Lucio, Wizard.
Holy crap, the boss herself.
Anastasia Lucio was one of the next in line for a seat on the senior council and was the commander of the wardens. She was one tough old bird, and she was the field commander of the council's forces in the war with the Red Court.
Warden Lucio, I said respectfully, both because she probably deserved it and because I needed to get along with her as well as I possibly could.
What is the situation? She asked.
At least three apprentices to the necromancer Kemmler are here in Chicago, I said. They found the fourth book. They're going to use it tonight. There was a stunned silence from the other end of the phone.
Hello, I said.
Are you sure?
Lucio asked. Her voice had a faint Italian accent.
How do you know who they are?
All those zombies and ghosts were sort of a giveaway, I said.
I confronted them. They identified themselves as Gravain, Cowl, and Capio Corpus, and they each had a drummer with them.
Dio, Lucio said.
Do you know where they are?
Not yet, but I'm working on it, I said. Can you help?
Affirmative, Lucio said. We will dispatch wardens to Chicago immediately. They will arrive at your apartment within 6 hours.
Might not be the best place, I said. I was attacked there last night, and my wards got torn apart. The apartment may be under surveillance.
Understood. Then we will rendezvous at the alternate location.
I checked the notebook. I'd have to meet them at McAnally's.
Gotcha, I said.
Che cosa? She asked.
Understood, Warden, I said. 6 hours, alternate location. Don't skimp on the personnel either. These folks are serious.
I am familiar with Kemmler's disciples, she said, though her tone was more one of agreement than reprimand. I will lead the team myself. 6 hours.
Right, 6 hours. She hung up the phone. I settled it back onto its cradle, lips pursed in thought. Hell's bells. The war captain of the White Council herself was to take the field. That meant that this situation was being regarded as an emergency tantamount to a terrorist with an armed nuclear bomb.